wrote his book called I Am That on the basis of one of those stanzas. And the stanza says that the yogi should attach neither to pleasure, pain nor pleasure, that freedom of thought in the mind is the place where happiness dwells, where the yogi finds happiness. And you find it by breathing in and repeating ham, and you find it by breathing out and repeating sa, and that it's in the space between ham and sa, either on the in-breath or the out-breath, that the thought-free space of Bhairava is found. And so that's Baba's book called I Am That, which is one of the first books you read when you come to Siddha Yoga, so that everybody who is an earnest Siddha Yogi knows all of this stuff, see, I think. And then there's this thing that Ramdas brought this morning, Resonate with Stillness, Daily Contemplations, from the words of Swami Muktananda and Swami Chidvalasananda. And this is a quote from Swami Muktananda, and it says, these are just noises that happen in the house. The house is a magical house. It both falls apart and builds itself back up again without any hands.
Regenerating.
Self-regenerating.
It's alive.
It's totally alive. And then at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, when everybody's asleep, and you hear bam, like a 2x4 falling over from the wall onto the floor. You know how much noise a 2x4 makes? You can hear noises like that in this house. It's really wonderful, because you know that you're not alone in here. Sometimes you wonder who it is who's doing it.
Yeah, especially when you don't lock the doors.
Oh my goodness, which happens a lot. So anyway, this is here called... And of course, what I say in the dream work is the same thing. And I didn't invent it. I found it all in these scriptures. So the dream work is based on my experience with all this ancient stuff. And I say that we have a mechanism in our mind that creates thought. We have another mechanism in our mind that creates intuition, which is always a higher hypothesis to thought, which becomes a hypothesis when we believe it. We don't believe every one of the thoughts that goes through our mind.
But it becomes a hypothesis when we believe it?
When we believe it, it turns into a hypothesis. Okay. Because what happens is, when we believe a thought, we mistakenly think that it's knowledge. And so we think that we know something, and we're getting ready to get our ass kicked, you know, and our head stepped on, or something like that in reality. Because as soon as we believe a thought, that becomes for us what the Shiva Sutras calls limited knowledge, jnanam bandha. Knowledge is bondage. That kind of knowledge becomes bondage, because as soon as we believe a thought, we run headlong into a wall. And Nicholas of Cusa calls that wall the wall of paradise in his book, Dialectical Mysticism, because he says that that wall seems like the wall of impossibility, because it creates an obstacle in life that we don't seem to be able to get past. But when we do get past it by paying attention to our intuition, we go on to the other side of that wall automatically, and we're in paradise. Okay, so Plato knew this. Socrates says in the Philebus, we have to get beyond hypothesis. We have to move beyond hypothesis, because hypothesis is ignorance. And I know that I know nothing. And when you tell me that you know something, then I become your slave, because if you can teach me how you know that, I will be indebted to you for the rest of my life, because the only thing that I want in my life is the ability to know. I want to be able to know, because everything that it seemed to me that I knew in life, I found out that I didn't know it, to the point where I come to realize I know that I know nothing. Okay, so this is all over the place, right? I'm not the only one who says this. So here's this thing, Baba, who I have a lot of respect for. Knowledge is the true giver of light. It makes trust, faith, and strength flourish. It shines in the mind and intellect. The Lord of the universe is beheld everywhere. When it shines in the mind and intellect, the Lord of the universe is beheld everywhere. And what people experience when we do the dream work, and I go like a jackhammer and find that place where they've got their arms and hands wrapped around a thought with avid determination to hold on to it, and I tease them with the jackhammer of the intuition into letting go of their attachment to that thought, they fall into this free space. And I say, are you ready? Are you ready to do the bidding? Are you ready to do what it's asking you to do? And the person says, yes, I'm ready to do what it's asking me to do. And I say, okay, now look at that dream situation again. And it turns into a divine experience of this knowledge, which is the true giver of light. It's when the sun that is now illuminating the world in the sky, which gives rise to our sense perception, that same sun can illumine ourselves inside of the sovereign precincts of our own mind as eye-conscious awareness. And when the sun shines inside of our own mind instead of just in the outside nature, then we know. And that's why this work that we're doing here is related to the sun. But it isn't that sun, it's that sun that then appears in the mind. And that's what this work is about. So knowledge, he says, is the true giver of light. We think that is the giver of light. Knowledge is the true giver of light. Baba is a very clever man. See? It makes trust, faith, and strength flourish. You know what strength is? Power. Mm. Power. So, Nicholas says here, we see in the, and this is the first sentence in Learned Ignorance, which is a book that you already read. So you already know this. I'm sorry, Jonathan.
I've memorized it.
You already know all this stuff.
I'll take a nap while you read it.
Okay. We see that by the gift of God there is present in all things a natural desire to exist in the best manner in which the condition of each thing's nature permits this. I want to read it again.
Yeah, please.
Would you?
I want to read it again.
Because you lost me in the first one.
This is just one sentence. It's a very simple sentence.
Is it the first sentence of the book?
The very first sentence, okay. Chapter 1. Okay. How it is that knowing is not knowing. Okay. Is the chapter 1, how it is that knowing is not knowing. Okay, I mean, I'm telling you guys, this stuff, we can find it consistently throughout all of the great writings of world literature. It comes from every single tradition that believes in God. You don't find it in Buddhism, because Buddhism doesn't believe in God, unless the Buddhist believed in God before he became a Buddhist. And we went to one yesterday who was a guy who believed in God before he became a Buddhist, or who came to believe in God after he was exposed to Christianity, even after he was a Buddhist. There are Buddhists that believe in God, but it isn't inherently nature in every religion to believe in God. We see that by the gift of God, there is present in all things a natural desire to exist in the best manner in which the condition of each thing's nature permits this. So what he's saying is each thing, each being in nature has conditions which limit its ability. But there's a drive inside of everything to push it, its actions and its ability to know and to live to the full extent of their ability. And the ability is limited by the condition of each thing's nature. Now, humans are different from the rest of animals. And I know that I'm speaking about something here which is taboo in our culture. In our culture, we have many taboos. God is a taboo in our culture. Many people in our culture will not go into a group where God is discussed because they don't believe in God. And this woman that we met at Maria's house that one day, when I mentioned God, she had a big problem with that. And she jumped right in and said, "I don't believe in God." And I said, "That's okay, you don't have to, you know, I don't
Cynthia?
Care about that." Huh? Cynthia, yeah.
And
I said, "Just because you don't believe in it doesn't mean that I can't talk about it. I know that it's taboo with you in your mind, and it's okay. You can have that taboo, you know, but I'm going to talk about it anyway." So I'm going to talk about this other taboo, that human beings have a capacity that other animals don't have. We're obviously an animal. You know, to me, we're obviously an animal. But we have in our mind, we have thought, we have intuition, and we have eye consciousness. We have the space between the thoughts. And in the space between the thoughts, we find knowledge, which is the true giver of light. And I know that this is what we call human creative imagination. And I know that that creativity exists inside of everything. I know that it exists inside of that tree and that grass and that flower. And it exists inside of the earth. It exists in the space between the earth and the sun. It exists in the sun. It exists in the solar system. It exists everywhere. This creativity exists everywhere. But the thing about a human being is a human being can become consciously aware of it. And a human being then, by becoming consciously aware of it, can learn to develop willful self-determination to participate in it. Mm. And what we're learning in the dream work discussions that we're having is that we can go back into a dream and we can revisit it as if we were in a movie set, making a movie. And we can recreate that whole thing, starting from beginning, and find it in its original condition, the way that we first had the dream, and then recreate it by going in and changing our willful attitude about our relationship between the thought and the intuition in the dream. And that we can then recreate the creative impulse that actually happened to us in the dream, that we have forgotten, and that we can expand that creative impulse, which is called the infinitesimal, smaller than the smallest and greater than the greatest, that became overshadowed and therefore forgotten by the reactive tendency of the mind. See, he doesn't tell you in here that when you experience that light, when it shines in the mind and intellect, the Lord of the universe is beheld everywhere. He doesn't tell you that when you do that, that your mind has a tendency to react against that. Because what has happened is you have left the room in which those thoughts are created. And that mechanism that creates those thoughts has an obligation to hold on to you. Because otherwise you're not interested in your body and you'll leave. Like the yogi sitting in the forest who goes into meditation, and he goes into the Sushumna and up into the Sahasrara, and he never comes back, and his body withers away. And they wondered what happens to that son of a bitch, you know. Oh, he went into meditation and he left. Yeah, well, big deal. He didn't come back and share his experience with the next guy. He was selfish and kept it all for himself. And so nobody else got any benefit out of it, just him. And
so God pulls him back and says, hey, you got to do this over.
So that's what Ram does. That's what Vasishtha did to his disciple Ram. You know, he went into his Sushumna and went up into the Sahasrara and found him up there because he didn't want to wake up. And he said, hey, come on, get back down here. You know, you got a world out there that's suffering. They need you to go and tell them about this experience. So then Ram went on to the whole escapade of getting married to Sita and losing Sita to Ravana and hooking up with what's his name? The monkey god?
Hanuman,
you know, and creating the whole Ramayana. And we wouldn't have the Ramayana if Vasishtha hadn't gone up and got Ram to come back down out of the Sushumna. So the thing that we learn in the dream work is that we have an obligation to go into that space to experience this light which shines in the mind and the intellect and gives us trust and faith and strength to live our life and to make our life better and to make our life and to make the life of other people around us better. That we have this capacity available to us as a condition of our nature, which permits us to rise to that level of excellence, that we as human beings can actually be divine by rising to the level of excellence that is permitted to us by the condition of having knowledge, thought and intuition, which breaks us free and makes us capable of having knowledge. Okay. Then this great thing here, and this winds it up. Then we'll go to work.
What's the work?
Then we'll go to work.
Okay.
Yeah, then we'll... Okay. This is this great translation of the stanzas on vibration by Mark Dusgalski. And he starts it off by saying, we praise that Shankara, who is the source of the power of the wheel of energies by whose expansion and contraction the universe is absorbed and comes into being. He starts that off by number one. Okay, over here in number seven, he's talking about the experience of knowledge in the mind. Then in that great sky, when the sun, that sun out there, and the moon dissolve away, because you are lighted by the light of I consciousness. And when you're lighted by the light of the I consciousness, you're not interested in thoughts and intuitions anymore. You're not interested in sense perception the way that you knew it. And so what happens is the sun and the moon dissolve away for somebody who goes into that state. However, the one who is not trained to stay in that state, the dull-minded yogi, he gets cast down into a state like that of deep sleep, which is a dark night of habit because of the reaction of the mind. The awakened, however, remains lucid. So in this state, when we're trained, when we're really trained, we can go into that state, even in a dream, and remain lucid if we're trained. If we're trained. But if we're dull-minded because we haven't accepted the training, we fall back into that state of the dark night of habit and believe the reaction of the mind. And this scripture here is onto that. This scripture here knows about it, see? So he says, seizing that strength. Mantras endowed with the power of omniscience perform their functions as do the senses of the embodied. When you're able to stay in that state, everything works for you. Seizing that strength, mantras endowed with the power of omniscience perform their functions as do the senses of the embodied. So when we're not in that state, our senses give us thoughts. When we are in that state, our senses give us knowledge. Yeah, this is really true.
Oh, yeah, as in the dream when we let go.
Yeah.
And
stay
and
there.
Say, well, now go back and look at that character now, and that character is divine in some way.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so it is there alone that they, the yogi, who is able to stay in that state, quiescent and stainless. It is there alone that they, the senses of perception and the thoughts and the intuitions, quiescent and stainless, dissolve away along with the adept's mind, and so he partakes of Shiva's nature. No shit, Dominic.
My chicken agrees with you.
I wonder what that was. That's a chicken.
Yeah, it's a rooster up
yeah,
there.
Yeah, thank you, buddy.
Yeah, he's thanks for your path. Read that again, he's telling
him. You just enlightened him.
It is there alone that they, quiescent and stainless, dissolve away along with the adept's mind, and so partake of Shiva's nature. Everything arises out of the individual soul. And so he is all things because he perceives his identity with the awareness that he has of them. And this is where, it's from these scriptures, these scriptures of Utpaladeva and of the guy who wrote this book. I forget his name.
Utpaladeva?
Utpaladeva wrote the Dark...
Shemaraja? No.
Utpaladeva wrote stanzas on recognition.
That was Shemaraja.
Shemaraja was a disciple of Abhinavagupta. Oh, and he wrote a synopsis of all of that stuff. But the guy who wrote the Shiva Sutras, what was his name?
Vasugupta,
that's it, yeah. He wrote this one too. They imagine that he wrote this one too. Everything arises out of the individual soul. You got it all inside of you. And so he is all things. And in that state, you realize that you are all of that. And you realize also, according to these guys, that you are the support of that. And when they say that, then you go into that state and you can actually experience, oh my God, I am the support of all of that. And that's why we do it. That's why Vasishtha got Ram back down out of that state, because he needed to go out there and support all of that. That's what we're here for. We got a mission. We have a mission.
I thought we did.
Huh?
I've been thinking of that.
We have a mission, and our mission is to support all of this.
Yeah.
But we have to learn how to support this before we can support that. And as long as we're not supporting this, we're depending on somebody else to support it.
Now, you had a dream work person that experienced this, right? After you had gone through the dream, he experienced oneness with everything in the room.
Yeah, I've had many people who do that. He's one of them.
I did, huh?
Yeah.
Just wasn't aware of it. Just forgot it.
Extended that far.
No, you know Radha Dugu? No. Who's the wife of this guy who used to be in the... He's a photographer. And anyway, she had that experience. She was sitting there, and I said, well, what is all this stuff around you like here? And she said, I am all of this stuff. She said, I experience the unifying factor that makes me and all of this the same. And I said, well, what's your relationship with it? Who supports what? Does it support you? And she said, no, I support it. And see, we're in our mind, in our normal mind, we believe that the world is supposed to support us. And so we're looking for every goddamn thing we can get from the earth, from the world, and from the world in the time that we see allotted to us. We're looking out here to reach out and to grab everything that we can get because we think that we need it to support us. And our actual mission, our actual destiny, our actual purpose in life is to support that. Not to be supported by it.
After the month-long course, I was so freaking high one night, and I was staying at the bungalows, you know, with Linda and John and Lindsay when they were small. And as I was walking back in one of those hot summer nights, the katydids that sing at night, they were going, I am Shiva. I am Shiva. I mean, first it was a katydid, but then it turned into Shiva. I am Shiva. I am Shiva. And I was just like, then I got home to the bungalow, and I could hear John and Lindsay breathing. And as they were breathing out, they were saying, I am Shiva. I am Shiva.
Yeah.
It was one of the most amazing experiences.
Yeah, and it's real. Really? See, Don, the thing of it is we think that we have gone beyond. And that we're beyond, and that's the beyond. Well, it's beyond thought, there's no doubt about it. But it isn't beyond anything real, because thoughts are imaginary. Thoughts present an imaginary conceptual awareness of the reality. So it says, he perceives his identity with the awareness that he has of them. Therefore, there is no state in the thoughts of words or their meanings that is not Shiva. It is the enjoyer alone who always and everywhere abides as the object of enjoyment, or constantly attentive and perceiving the entire universe's play. He who has this awareness is undoubtedly liberated in his very life. This is indeed the arising of that object of meditation in the mind of the meditator, namely the adept's realization of his identity with it by the force of his intent. And this is what we have to do. We have to learn that in this moment of the experience of intuition, where we go into that space of what Leibniz called the infinitesimal, because it has nothing to do with thought and intuition. So therefore, it has nothing to do with time and space. And therefore, we don't perceive it in the time and space way that we perceive the world in our thoughts. So he calls it the infinitesimal, which is smaller than the smallest, or greater than the greatest, and when we go into that thing inside of our head there that is smaller than the smallest, the mind reacts because we have left the mind, and it has no influence on us anymore. So it starts telling these amazing lies. It starts telling these amazing goddamn fucking lies that scare the shit out of us. And we think, oh my God. And we go back into it and leave that freedom of that space because we believe that crap that it tells us. And we see it in the dream. We see the amazing stuff that the mind creates in order to scare us into coming back. And because we believe it, we go back and we rob ourselves of that great sky. And so, this guy talks about that also in a very beautiful way. This alone is the attainment of the nectar of immortality. This indeed is to catch hold of oneself. And it's right there where the mind is reacting. That's when we have to catch a hold of ourselves. And this guy knew it and says it in a very beautiful way, in the way that this guy has translated that. This is the initiation into eye consciousness, which bestows Shiva's true nature. Requested by the will. And you have to exercise your own free will here. Because you're in that state, and the mind is reacting. And you have a choice. Am I going to believe that stuff? Or am I going to stay here? Right? There's a good reason why it's reacting. There's a good reason why it's telling you that. Because we need to go out into the world and share this with the world. But requested by the will, the benefactor makes the sun and the moon rise again. Remember over here where I said the sun and the moon sets? Well, requested by the will, the sun and the moon can rise again. Because when you go back to the mind, you can go back as the trainer of the mind, instead of the slave of the mind. You can go back to training your mind into thinking a higher species of thought than you were thinking before, so that you are raising yourself up into the level of a more beautiful soul, which is your ability to make the world more beautiful. The sun and the moon rise and bestows on the embodied while they are awake the objects that are in their heart, the objects of their desire. We think that we have to go back to the mind because we need to live in our, we need to be able to get what our mind tells us we need. But he says, so also in the dream state, Shiva, residing in the center between thought and intuition, manifests without exception, always and most vividly, the things his devotee desires.
What was that again?
This is where we get what we want.
What is that? I missed that.
No kidding, Jonathan. This is where we all miss this. This is tough. This is. We have to thank you for saying it, Jonathan.
I missed it.
We. I know I'm putting you to sleep.
No, but I needed that chai.
Oh, okay.
Everyone got chai with me.
Okay, we'll stop here in a minute. We'll have a break and make some chai.
We'll have a chai break, but that's all right.
So also in the dream state, Shiva, residing in the center, manifests without exception, always and most vividly, the things his devotee desires. Because he never desists from his prayerful request. Shiva can't hold it back, man. You want it, you go into that space of freedom in between, he's going to manifest what you want, because he cannot desist from your prayerful request.
In the dream state.
So also in the dream state. Okay. So also in the dream state, Shiva, residing in the center, manifest without exception, always and most vividly, the things his devotee desires, because he never desists from his prayerful request. I'm telling you, you know what? This is a promise that this scripture is making, and I have proven it over and over and over again in dream work sessions that I do with people, that this is true. Damn it! Otherwise, as happens normally, the generation of images would be continuous and independent throughout the waking and dreaming states in accord with their character, as happens to the worldly. Now, here he's talking about the linear nature of thought, one thought after another, one thought after another, never breaking free into the space of the center. Otherwise, as happens normally, the generation of thoughts would be continuous and independent throughout the waking and dreaming state in accord with their character, as happens to the worldly.
What page is that on?
These are the stanzas you're reading.
This is stanza number 35.
35.
Yeah, see, Tom, in the very first of the book, okay, all of the 52 stanzas are written there. And this is the whole stanzas on vibration, these two pieces of paper. All the rest of this is commentary, because these guys can't figure it out. This is so difficult that these guys couldn't figure it out, so they wrote all these long books about what this means. You know, and we have it in here, in thought, intuition, and eye consciousness, and the relationship of these three things to each other. And because the infinitesimal is such a different experience, the eye consciousness, most people don't know that they experience that.
Well, you said that thought is imaginary. That it's imaginary, so it's a hindrance to eye consciousness, but yet God gives us thought in order to reach eye consciousness.
Okay, it's true that I say that, but I say that after I say that thought is an interpretation of sense perception, which is given to us by God in order to get us moving, to create desires towards the objects of our perception, and to give us a way of working with the sensuous reality, so that we can move off of the dime and start doing something with our life in this world. Because if we didn't have sense perception and thought, we would all be rocks who would never move and never do anything. Sense perception gets us moving and leads us, but when we are moving with the thoughts that are derived from sense perception, and we turn our relationship to the thought into belief, which gives us an experience that we know what we are thinking, then we run headlong into a wall, and intuition appears to liberate us from that thought, because that thought has reached the end of its usefulness. It's useful and divine insofar as it gets us moving. This is really important to understand this, and it has to be explained like this, and you can write about this, Jonathan. This is really important because I know that you can write about this. Yeah. And you can write about it in a way that people can have an experience of it. But thought is important, and it is divine. And it creates a door of magical wonder into the divine. But it itself is not
knowledge.
Knowledge. It leads to knowledge by when we become aware of and accept the power of intuition while we're hanging on to a thought with our head running headlong into that wall of paradise. And then we move into the space of eye consciousness in which all of the obstacles that we became aware of in our attachment to the thought are dissolved. All the obstacles are dissolved. And there's a reason for that that's explained in here. Because these obstacles are not in the reality. These obstacles are only in the mind because of the inability of a thought to represent reality. The obstacles arise only inside of the thoughts. The obstacles are not there.
Do the obstacles arise in the thought or in our choice to identify with the thought?
They arise in the thought as we identify with them.
If we don't identify the thought, there's no
We don't see any obstacles because we're not trying to make that thought work for us. When we identify with the thought, we're trying to make it work for us in order to achieve what that thought is promising us as an object of our desire. All of this stuff, I can prove it. I mean, I can demonstrate that this is real. That this is real. These guys say it too. I won't go into this, but that thing that I just now said to you about that the obstacles are not out there, it's said in here in the second verse, I think. Yeah. In verse number one, he says, we praise that Shankara. In the second verse, he says, that in which all this creation is established and from whom it arises is nowhere obstructed because it is unconditioned by its very nature. So there are no conditions out there. There are no conditions in reality. Conditions are built into the nature of thought and intuition.
Baba said yesterday, July 4th, when you attain pure knowledge, ignorance never troubles you again.
It's the same thing.
You pervade the entire cosmos. Your freedom accomplishes everything.
It's the same thing. It's the same thing, and I'm telling you. Go ahead, Don.
Okay, so literally, you could interpret the Bible as believing if there are no obstructions,
except in your mind,
to this power, then the world could have been created in 7 days, like the Bible said.
Of course,
not like the billions of years that the evolutionists say.
Right.
That anything is possible, like Deepak Chopra talks about the field.
Well, the whole concept of time.
If you want to go one step further, the Sufis say that the world is created anew from zero to this whole creation every billionth of a second.
Yeah.
In other words, there's no movement. It's created, my hand's created this way, and then everything dissolves and comes out new with a new creation that's different because now my hand is a billionth of an inch further. So that's how the Sufis see it. Ibn Arabi is.
And it's the same.
If nothing can construct you, then you can. There's no time. You can create this world a billion times in a second.
Nothing's
obstructing you.
We are.
Right.
and see time, like the billions of years and so on, that's all in concept. Time and space is all conceptual. It actually doesn't exist outside of concept. And it doesn't exist outside of thought.
Did Einstein realize that?
Yes, he did.
He did.
Absolutely, he did.
But yet all of his formulas are about time and relativity.
Because they're trying to explain, What they are, Dominic, is creating new species of thought in order to help us to understand the reality better and better and better within the framework of thinking. Because the higher species of thought that we're able to create, the more beautiful we become in the world, living together as societies and so on and so forth.
And yet the scientists, though, just like the religious dogmas, they believe that time really does exist.
Well, now, there are scientists who do.
Yeah.
Because they're conceptual scientists. Uh-huh. They call them empirical science.
Yes.
Yeah. And then there are other scientists who come in the tradition of Leibniz and Gauss and Riemann and Georg Cantor and Max Planck and Albert Einstein and so on and so forth, and they don't believe in that. They know that the reality is in the infinitesimal, and that the perception of the thought world needs to be improved.
I don't know if this relates to it, but Einstein said, "I'll explain relativity very simply. When you're with a beautiful woman, a second seems like an hour. Seems like a second. When your hand's in a flame, a second seems like an hour."
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's the same thing, exactly.
Yeah, it's all perception. It's all relative.
Relativity.
Yeah, because when you're with a beautiful woman, you move into the infinitesimal. You move really literally outside of your concepts. You're not worried about the mail and the bills and the bill collector.
And the future.
And the past and the future, which are all concepts of time. So, even when division prevails, due to the waking and other states, the waking state, the dreaming state, the causal state, even when division prevails, it, Shankara, Shiva, extends through that which is undivided. The waking state and the dreaming state are divided, but it isn't divided. Extends through that which is undivided because the perceiving subjectivity forever remains true to its own nature. The perceiving subjectivity, which is your identity, always remains true to its own nature and never gets caught up in all these limitations. And so in dream work, what we're doing is trying to recreate this experience of the infinitesimal, where we can go into experiencing that, what he calls the... where did I say it? Subjectivity.
Three.
Perceiving subjectivity. The perceiving subjectivity. Not the identity type, but the real I. Anyway, this translation here
is good.
Really helps, especially when you do dream work with this book. Stephanie and I studied this thing for 2 months one summer. I had a hard on the whole summer.
didn't get a piece.
Perennial.
Too bad, man. Call your doctor if the erection lasts for more than 4 hours. So why? It's working, buddy.
Obviously, I created an experience of the infinitesimal in which everybody gets to enjoy happiness.
The whole summer passed and it felt like 1 minute.
I was working with these young guys on the dock one day, and this old man drives by and he's pushing a big stack of pallets, right? And these young guys that I'm with, and he says, "Hey, Menuzo, look at that! Even he's got wood."
Oh wow! Yeah. No kidding. But I got some great news from Louisa yesterday when she called, because Stephanie goes from one man to the next and she can never find the man that she wants to live with.
She found him?
No, she didn't find him.
Oh.
She tells Louisa that she can't find a man who is like enough like Rand. so that she can be satisfied with him. So she told Louisa Saturday, I'm going to forget about trying to find a man. I'm just going to go and live with Rand in New Mexico.
There you go.
Dude, man.
She was fulfilling your desires.
Yeah, so I'll be able to get a hard on again.
You gotta be careful, man. Young girl like that.
Oh, she's not so young anymore. She's like, is this recording, Don?
Yeah, push stop. See it?
We gotta make sure that this doesn't get out into the public.